thank you so much for coming again today. Really, really do appreciate it. I've enjoyed this meeting thus far very well, and I appreciate the hospitality that everyone has shown so very much. I got to tell you this story. Greg was just talking about how when he was a kid that some of the guys around him during the flood would watch the rain trash and try to shoot them. I used to tell this story. I've kind of retired it, but I'll revive it once more. Forgive me if you've heard it. The story about this fellow down in the hollers of West Virginia, where the sun only shines from 10 to 2, you know. And it was back in the old days, and he had to go outside to this little house every once in a while, and he didn't like it because it was hot in the summer and cold in the winter, and it smelled all the time. You know what I'm talking about. So he decided that next time the water got up, he was going to push it over into the creek. Well, he did. One day, water got up, and he worked on it, pushed it over into the creek, and it floated away. That night at dinner, his dad took a bite, cleared his throat, said, "Somebody pushed the outhouse into the creek today." The boy kind of stiffened up, but he tried to play it cool. His dad took another bite and said, "It was you, wasn't it, son?" Looked right at him. So the boy got an idea. He said, "Yes, it was, Dad. But today, we studied in school how when George Washington chopped down the cherry tree, he didn't get in trouble because he told the truth." Father took another bite and said, "George Washington's father wasn't in that cherry tree." I'd get you in trouble right there, for sure. Well, here's a couple extra books down here. Let me get them for you. Here you go. If you would, please, turn to number 65 in your book there, and we'll sing that. That's sort of our theme song for this class session this hour. Number 65. A friend of mine by the name of Mike Yost wrote it. He wrote some other songs in here that are very beautiful as well. Use me, Lord, to teach the unlearned mind. Use me, Lord, to reach the fallen child. For I know it's not from me, but your vessel I can be. So, dear Lord, use me. Use me, Lord, to feed the ones in need. Use me, Lord, to mend the heart that bleeds. For I know it's not from me, but your vessel I can be. So, dear Lord, use me. Use me, Lord, to protect your holy name. Use me, Lord, to stop the sinner's gain. For I know it's not from me, but your vessel I can be. So, dear Lord, use me. Just love the thoughts and the sentiment of that song. I want to tell you about a friend that I visit in a nursing home in Shadyside, Ohio. His name is Alex Rich. I hope he doesn't mind me using his name. It's too late now if he does. He is 93 years old. He fought in World War II. As a matter of fact, he stormed the beaches of Normandy on D-Day. He is a fascinating man to go and spend time with. I wish I had more time to spend with him and hear his stories. He is one of the most jovial men you will ever meet. As soon as you go to meet him, you're entertained. You go, and he just starts talking, and all you got to do is listen, and you leave feeling better than when you went in. It's that kind of situation. He was messing with me about my foot. He said, time I visited him, that he noticed I had a limp. That was before I was diagnosed with that blood clot. When I came back, he said, "I heard you had a blood clot." I said, "Yeah." He said, "What'd you do?" And I told him I was in a tree, and I jumped out flatter. He said, next time wear a parachute. You know, he's a real practical sort of fella. One time I was visiting him, I kind of catch him at supper a lot because it's on my way home, and he was eating lasagna. So I stepped in there, and he's got people around him, other tables and things. And first he starts telling me about how he's afraid he's going to get caught because he had family in the mafia, and they're writing a book about him and things like that. And I don't know what he's making up and what he isn't half the time. Then he said, I said, how's your lasagna? And he said, let me tell you something. He just kept laughing as he talks. Let me tell you something. If my mother made lasagna like this, I'd take her to California, throw her off the Golden Gate Bridge. Just a jovial, jovial man. But I think of him because today we're talking about how we can continue to serve God at different stages in our lives. We all have transitions in our lives. We all have different points in our lives. That man is 93 years old and can't do a lot right now, but I tell you what he does. He cheers up everybody that goes to see him. And he is a great example for me. He's been faithful in the church for a long time. His wife is still attends services when she is able, and when she's not with him. He's just a wonderful, wonderful example. Let's get some biblical background before we go further. Please turn to Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 14, if you would. You know the parable of the talents, but we'll read it and remind ourselves of it real quickly. And I'd like to remind you of the context in which it comes. Do you realize the context of the parable of the talents? What comes before it? What comes after it? Why it's there? It's one of the things I was taught in scripture interpretation class. Read the whole book. What comes before this passage? What comes after this passage? Why it's there in the middle of it. And don't just yank it out and take it out of context. Why is the parable of talents there? Well, Jesus in Matthew chapter 24 has warned the Jews of the destruction of Jerusalem. And then he's turned his attention to the second coming. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the Son of Man. Matthew 24, verse 36. Or not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. And Mark, he says, not even the Son of Man. Then he talks about Noah. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days when the Lord comes. They didn't know what was coming, and it came upon them suddenly. It'll be that way in the day of the Lord. Then he tells a parable about the evil servant who is beating his master's servants while his master is away, and his master comes back too quickly. He's caught. And he is punished. And that's the way it's going to be when the Son of Man comes. Some people won't be expecting it and won't be ready. Then he tells a parable about people waiting too long to get ready. The parable of the foolish virgins. Remember that? The five wise and the five foolish. The five had plenty of extra oil for their lamps. The five foolish did not. When the bridegroom finally comes around midnight, the five foolish say, let us borrow some of your oil. Well, if they spread out that oil among everybody, nobody's going to have enough oil to meet the bridegroom in their customary fashion and bring him into the wedding banquet. And so the five wise say to the five foolish, you got to go get your own. And, you know, it's not modern America. Things aren't open all night. There's not a speedway down the corner to get. So they go and they try to get some and they come back and it's too late and the door is shut and the bridegroom doesn't know their voices. And that's the way it will be in the day of the coming of the Son of Man. And then skip the parable of the talents, and what comes next? The great judgment scene where he separates the sheep and the goats, and they're judged according to their works. Now, in the middle of that comes the parable of the talents. Do you think that maybe using our talents might have something to do with how we're going to be judged? It's right there in context, isn't it? Matthew chapter 25, verse 14, Jesus tells this parable. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. Now their word talent, this English word talent here in context, is not the same word we think of as talent. I think of my daughter as talented on the piano. My son is talented in composition. Other people talented in sports. Other people talented in computers. Other people talented in business. That's how we think of talented. Here, it meant money. Somehow, it was some measure of money. But the idea of what you're able to do is still involved, because how did he dole out the money? Each according to his own ability, what he thought he could handle. So the one with five talents, the master must have thought had more business acumen than the one he gave two talents, and he thought he must have had more business acumen than the one he gave one talent. But he gave them each according to their own ability. There's a point to be made pausing right there. God doesn't expect more of us than our ability. I cannot go to Russia and speak Russian and convert all the masses immediately. I'm supposed to use what God's given me for him, and he doesn't expect things that I cannot do. On the flip side of that is that we need to remind ourselves that when we have ability, we need to use it. Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 48, "To whom much is given, much shall be required." I used to use that phrase a lot when I was teaching teenage classes. And I'd say, teenagers, compare yourselves with teenagers all over the world. You are sitting here in an air-conditioned church building on comfortable seats. You're going to go home to an air-conditioned building, watch TV and play video games, and you're going to get up in the morning, you're going to go to school and get an education. And you're not going to like school, but there are children all over the world who are living in caves and living in tents who would love the opportunity to go to learn so they could be smart enough to get rid of those tents and caves and make a better living and make a better life for themselves and their country. Do you have much given to you? And they grudgingly say yes. Well, to whom much is given, much shall be required. Well, he gives them each according to their own ability. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made 5 other talents. He does some good business there and he makes 5 more pieces of money. And likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. Oh, I'm not going to lose this. I'm nervous. I'm not going to lose this. I'm not going to take any chances with it. I'm just going to hide it right here. It'll be here when he gets back. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who also received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents, and look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, here you have what is yours. I was kind of fearful doing something, so I didn't step out. I lacked confidence in my ability. I didn't have the right kind of the acumen available. It wasn't me, Lord. It wasn't me. In other words, what he's saying to him is, Lord, I knew better than you did what I was able to do. In a business situation, that might be reasonable. But Jesus is not talking about a business situation here. In a business situation, it might be reasonable for me to go to my boss and say, look, you've given me too much. I can't handle this. I need to change jobs or I need to get an adjustment in my workload. That might be reasonable. But the Lord knows us better than we know ourselves. Isn't that what Psalm 139 teaches? Look there real quickly if you would. Psalm 139, starting at verse 1. I hadn't planned to go there, but it fits in right here. Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue. But behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Now watch verse 6. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. You know me so well, Lord, that your knowledge is way up here. And it's way above what I know about myself. Now, I'm not saying, and I should not say, that God comes down and tells you what your talents are. I'm not saying that. I'll get there in a minute. But if God gives us some sort of ability and circumstances and we say, I'm just afraid to use it, aren't we kind of treading on dangerous ground? So, the man with 1 talent gets this from his Lord. But the Lord answered and said to him, verse 26, you wicked and lazy servant. Wait a minute. He was just afraid. Can't we have sympathy for that? Maybe the fear was a cover. You wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed. Well, those are the same reasons that he gave for being fearful of losing the money. And the same reasons come back to haunt him for what he said. I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not gathered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest. At least you could have put it in the bank and gained 1 or 2% interest for me. But you didn't do that. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Well, Jesus is saying there simply, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, isn't he? He's not meaning that on a financial level. But when people are talented and busy, don't they get more talents and busier? You ever heard the statement, if you want something done, give it to the busiest person you know? I notice that when I try to slack off of things a little bit, my time fills up faster with things that just don't matter. If I try to keep busy, then I get more done. Busy people are the people you want to go to if you need something done. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, how then do we define our talents and how do we define our abilities? I have this working theory that I'd like you to consider, that our talents are not defined by some special God-given gift necessarily. They're not defined by any miraculous thing because we don't get miracles today and we don't get miraculous abilities. We don't get the laying on of the hand of the apostles because the apostles are all gone. How do we define our talents, what we're able to do in service to the Lord? My suggestion is this, circumstances. Circumstances. My circumstances were that I was born into a home of a father who was a good man and a chemical worker and a mother who was a teacher. And mom was going to make sure we got a good education and there was no question we were ever going to college. And mom made sure that we had piano lessons and mom made sure we knew our Bible. And this is why circumstances. Is it better than anybody else's circumstance? No. Is it necessarily? I mean, somebody might be evil, I suppose. It's better than their circumstance. But is it better than any other Christian circumstance? No. It's just what happened to me by circumstance. I may not have chosen it. If I had my choice, I may have chosen to be a football player, may have chosen to have different emphases at home. Your children or you may have had different emphases at home. What was your circumstance? People grew up in a particular circumstance. Circumstance affect who they are, and what they're able to do. My grandmother, I was telling the halls yesterday, was a very intelligent woman, my sister tells me. She died really before I had a chance to know her too much. And my sister's much older than I am, much, much, much older than I am. And but she tells me that Grandma was so intelligent. And she would play Scrabble with Mom and just blow her out of the water, even though Mom had a college degree, you know. Grandma was just so intelligent, but she never had opportunity to go on to school. Just tragic in some senses, but Grandma was faithful in the church, from what I understand. She helped those people around her, and she used her intelligence in different ways. What are a person's circumstances? Maybe a person grew up in a home that was tragic, and he had a drunk father and a mean mother, but he comes out of it and finds Christianity, and then he knows how to teach people how not to do those certain things. He knows something about those certain things. And he knows something about how to teach people to deal with an alcoholic father. And he can maybe give counseling or something like that. Your circumstances. Just evaluate your circumstances and see, have I been brought to at this point in life that I am able to do? I think that's how you define a talent. Now, let's look at another subject besides talents. Hey, I've got alliterated points today, Mark. And the next subject is time. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3. I think you all know this. And if you're like me, you'll start having the Simon and Garfunkel song start going through your head here in a minute. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything, there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. All these may come in 1 week, you know. A time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to weep and a time to laugh. Figuratively speaking, all these may come in 1 week. May take a month. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Now, we could get into what some of those difficult things mean, but that's not our purpose right now. Our purpose right now is just to say there's different timing in life for certain things. Just look at the life of Jesus. He was eternal. He was before time. And yet there was a time for him to be born into this world. There was a time for his parents to take him down to Egypt and hide him so prophecy could be fulfilled and they come up out of Egypt. But after that was done, you don't go back and do it again. That time's passed. There was a time for him to be 12 years old and go teach the doctors of the temple. But then when he was 15 years old, I don't know what happened and all that, we're not told, but those things go past. There was a time for it, and then they're past. There was a time for him to be baptized. There was a time for him to be tempted. There was a time for him to minister. There was a time for him to heal. And there was a time for him to die, but only when he was ready. Remember, all through the book of John, he kept saying, "My hour has not yet come. My hour has not yet come. My hour has not yet come. And I'll lay down my life when I'm ready. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down. I have power to take it up again. This commandment I've received from my Father." It was all done on God's timing in Jesus' case. It was in the dispensation of the fullness of times, Ephesians 1, verse 10. It was in the fullness of time, Galatians 4, verse 4. Everything was done on God's terms for his life. It was all planned out. But there was a time for him then to die. There was a time for him to appear to his disciples after his resurrection. There was a time for him to ascend into heaven, and now there's a time for him to intercede for us, and that time will end someday when this world ends, and those who are his and are with him, and those who have not been his are away from him, and there will be no more intercession necessary. There was a time for every different role that he had in his life. Remember Moses. There was a time for every different role. There was a time for him to grow and learn in Pharaoh's household and at the feet of his mother. There was a time for him to be in Midian and lead the wandering shepherd's life that would prepare him for leading the Israelites for the next time in his life when he would lead them through the wilderness wandering for 40 years. He had been prepared up to that point for all of that. Paul spent a lot of his time doing things that weren't bad. That were bad. He did them in good conscience, but they were bad. He cast his vote against them when Christians were put to death. He arrested men and women and drug them off to prison. He did all these kinds of things. And then there was a time for him to have that vision on the road to Damascus, and there was a time for him to be baptized, and then there was a time for him to preach immediately. And then if I understand Galatians chapter 1 correctly, there was a time for him to go down to Arabia, maybe for 3 years, and get revelation from the Lord, and then come back to Damascus and start preaching again. And then there was a time for him to go to Jerusalem, and his brethren pleaded with him not to go to Jerusalem, and he said, "No, I got to go. The Holy Spirit tells me there's chains and imprisonment and death waiting for me there, but I got to go." There was a time for him to set his face toward Jerusalem. There was a time for him to go there to be arrested. There was a time for him to appear before governors. There was a time to appear before kings. There was a time for him to be in prison and write letters, and then there was a time for him later to be in prison and be beheaded. Different times in his life. Well, there's a time for everything. Now, in my life, in your life, we might be getting to a point where we get a little bit tired. Please look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and you know where I'm going there. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. This is one of the greatest poetic descriptions of old age that there is in any literature anywhere, because it's the best in the Bible, and the Bible is the best that we have anywhere. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before what comes? The difficult days. Does anybody notice that the older you get, the more difficult the days are? Does anybody notice that? Now, I'm only 51, and I still have a good deal of health, and I'm thankful for that. But, you know, pride went before a fall for me, literally speaking. Because just after polishing the pulpit in August, my wife and I took a hike in the Smoky Mountains for 2.5 miles one way and 2.5 miles back. And I told my friends we were with, I said, "You know, I'm just thankful that I can do this," because my dad couldn't do this at 51 years old. He'd already had a bunch of heart trouble and was way too overweight and had a bunch of other situations that I was just thankful I was able to do that. And then I was doing my exercises one day and I told somebody, "I'm just thankful I'm able to do this." And then I climb a tree and fall out and I'm not able to do this anymore. So pride went before a fall. Well, things change the older we get. I've heard a lot of people talk through the ages. I ask them, "How you doing?" There's a couple of pat answers that I've always loved. Some people would always say to me, "You can't be a wimp for getting old." Getting old's not for wimps. Another fellow would always say, I'd say to him, how you doing? He'd say, I'm old, fat, tired, and broke every time. I said, well, you need anything? $400 million and a day off. Well, you know, some pat answers there. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come. Well, I watch my daughter bound around. And, you know, our kids come home and they bound around and they're staying up till 12 or 1 in the morning, even if they have to get up early in the morning. And at 9 o'clock, I'm saying, I don't want to play cards. I just want to go to bed. You know, I used to want to go to Mountaineer games. I used to want to go to Steeler games. Now I just want my chair with the replay and the remote in my hand, you know. I'm not quite as old as some yet, but I realize where my stage in life is. And the days get a little more difficult as you get a little bit older, I suppose. Here's how the wise, inspired writer Solomon described them. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. This isn't fun anymore. A while back, my wife and I, it was just myself. I turned on the radio because I was just tired of the silence in the car for a little bit. Listened to a few songs from an oldie station that I used to listen to and heard Jack and Diane come on. And then I thought to myself, you know, little ditty about Jack and Diane, that's a filthy song. That's just a filthy, immoral song. But there's one line in it that I really liked. Oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. It's a whole lot of fun. Life goes on. I thought about that a lot the last few weeks. I thought about that the last couple of months. Life goes on after it's a whole lot of fun. What's it time to do then? Teach other people about life. It's time to serve. When you're not enjoying it, use it for somebody else. I mean, we can still enjoy it. I'm exaggerating things for the sake of making a point. Verse 2. While, that is, your youth would be, while the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened and the clouds do not return after the rain. Not 100% sure what this means, but often in apocalyptic literature, the sun and the light, moon and the stars would be representative of nations, and when a nation would be brought down, then the sun and the light and the moon and the stars would be darkened. A lot of commentators think that maybe he means the faculties of the mind as well as the outward countenance. That is, the faculties of the mind just aren't quite as bright as they used to be. The abilities that you have are just starting to fade. But in youth, that's when the sun and the light are not darkened. That's when the moon still shines. And the clouds do not return after the rain. Well, it seems the older you get, one storm passes, another storm comes. One storm passes, another storm comes real quickly. That's how it works. Verse 3. In the day, this is when you're old, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble. A lot of people say that refers to your hands. You keep the house because you do everything with your hands. The keepers of the house start to tremble because you're getting a little shaky. I've known lots of people that had to stop serving communion because they were just too shaky and were afraid they were going to spill everything in front of everybody. When the keepers of the house tremble and when the strong men bow down, a lot of people think that's your legs. My son used to brag to me, well, I can lift so much with my legs, but only this much with my arms. Welcome to the club, son. That's everybody. Your legs. The strong men bow down. When the grinders cease, your teeth start falling out. Right? Yeah? Your teeth start falling out. Which reminds me of another good old West Virginia joke. They invented the toothbrush in West Virginia. If they invented it anywhere else, it would have been called the teeth brush. I'm sorry. What has 156 legs and 3 teeth? Front row at a Garth Brooks concert. All right. Sorry. It's a joke. It's just a joke. Your teeth, mine are getting to that point. I just spent a whole bunch of money to get the fillings done when I was a teenager, redone. And there's still one tooth missing in there. When the grinders cease, and you might get dentures because they're few, and those that look through the windows grow dim, probably the eyes. Start having some glaucoma, some cataracts, some macular degeneration. Happens to a lot of people. When the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, maybe that means your hearing starts to go a little bit. And yet, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, oh, I'm up and I can't sleep. Mark and I were talking about that a minute ago. Oh, I'm up, can't sleep. That little bird's bothering me. I can't go to sleep anymore. And all the daughters of music are brought low. That is, I can't hear the music really well. My fingers can't do what they used to do on the piano. My voice can't do what it used to do when I was young. It it's a paradox thing where your hearing's going, but certain things you can hear and they really bother you, you know. And your wife accuses you of having selective hearing every once in a while. Also, they are afraid of height. There you go. They're afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, that might refer to gray hair, the grasshopper is a burden. I sleep with a noisemaker now. It just makes me really old, I suppose. I sleep with a noisemaker at home even because we live right by a road. And I take it with me when I travel, so I've got constant sound, the same sound every night when I go to bed. And it helps some, but it doesn't help some. Where it helps is, every once in a while, I could hear a cricket. And that cricket would just drive me nuts. And I couldn't find a cricket, and I couldn't go to sleep until I got the cricket. You know? Well, it just covers up the cricket a little bit. The sound of a grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. Well, I don't want to do this anymore. You want to go out for the evening? Nah, let's just stay home. You want to go out to eat? Nah, just have a sandwich. When desire fails. I remember Denver Cooper using this at my dad's funeral. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. We'll die someday. And people will mourn for us, but they just have to keep on going with life. Remember your Creator before those times, we want to tell young people. But it's also a reminder that when we're going through these things, we're not going through them alone. Now, to the Christian, there's a whole lot of hope in this. You remember 2 Corinthians chapter 4, starting at verse 16? Therefore, we do not lose heart, for though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. Remember that? The outward man is going downhill, but the inward man is going uphill. The inward man is growing. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter talks about godly wives and says that they should not let their adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing of gold, pearls, fine clothing, and so forth, but rather it should be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. The incorruptible beauty. I heard a speaker at a youth rally one time said, just go through your life. He said, my daughters hate when I do this. You'll probably hate it too. Go through your life and pretend that you have a wall where you place pictures. You place a picture here on the left corner of when you were 17 years old, and next to it a picture of when you're 27, and next 37, and next 47, and next, you see what he's doing? That's going to change. But what gets better is the incorruptible beauty that is inside if we're Christians. For our light affliction, Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4:17, is but for a moment, and it works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Why? This is one of my favorite verses, verse 18. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are unseen. For the things which are seen are what? Temporary. But the things which are unseen are eternal. I was at a youth rally one time. The speaker said, everybody look at your hands. Put your hands up. Look at your hands. Can you see them? Yeah, we can see them. They're temporary. They're not going to be here forever. What is going to be here forever? Your soul. God. The things you don't see. Therefore, when we put off this earthly tent, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. 2 Corinthians 5:1, the next verse. So it's kind of depressing in some ways, going through transitions of life. But last I checked, there's not a thing we can do about it. And we just got to do the best we can with it. Now, there are some inspirational stories in the Bible about some people at some old ages doing some things. We already studied one of them with Moses. Another is Caleb. You remember that story? Look at Joshua chapter 14, if you could. Joshua chapter 14. And you remember back in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, when the Israelites get to the land of Canaan, Moses wants them to go into the land of Canaan. He sends out 12 spies. Two of them are Joshua and Caleb. They come back and say, land looks good. God has given it to us. Let's go take the land. The other 10 say, well, we don't know. We're like grasshoppers in their sight, and they're really big, and we don't think we can beat them. And that's the reason they had to wander in the wilderness 40 years. So how do you think Joshua and Caleb would feel about that wandering in the wilderness? We wanted to go. We didn't vote for this. We didn't vote for manna every day. We didn't vote for the same tasting food every day. We voted for land of Canaan. We got to waste 40 years of our lives. Everybody else in our generation is going to die, but we're going to go in. Well, there's never an indication that they were bitter about it. Some things might happen to us that could make us bitter, but God says repeatedly in Ephesians, Colossians, put away all bitterness. There's never an indication that they were bitter. You know what happened with Joshua? He became the next leader of Israel that would take them in to the promised land. And you remember here what happens with Caleb, starting at verse 6. Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know the word of the which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart." I was 40 when that happened. "Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on that day, saying, 'Surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord God.'" In other words, God said, "This land where you spied out, that's going to be your land someday. "And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. I've been 40 years wandering, 5 years in conquering the land so far. Ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now here I am at this day, 85 years old." And this is the day when they're living, about 100, 110, 120. 85 years old, and as yet I am strong this, and yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both going out and for coming in. Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day." 85 years old. I'm just as strong as I was. Now give it to me. Sounds like a man, doesn't it? Well, men can do some things that aren't real smart, like I did a few weeks ago. But I believe Caleb was as strong as he was. And there's something to be said for keeping ourselves as long as we can keep ourselves. And that's inspirational. But there are things happen that we can't help. We go through transitions. There are different times in our lives that different things happen. And the challenge that I think we have from this series that I've been assigned, and from that song and the sentiment of it, and from what I look at from these passages in life, the challenge is to try to look at where I am in my stage of life and see how God can use me, how I can serve right there. Now I'll talk about some personal examples. I hope you don't get tired of me talking about my family, but I know them pretty well, and they've been good examples to me. My sister Christy taught school from the time she was 21 till 4 months ago. And she's now older than dirt. No, she's 58 years old. And she became one of the most beloved school teachers that there was in that county. She helped kids. She stayed after. She did all this work after school. She was the busiest person I've ever known, next to my mother. Teachers sometimes get into the teaching profession, and there are some bad teachers, but by and large, they deserve about three times what they get paid, I want to tell you. And she was one of those teachers. Well, she didn't have a lot of time to do a whole lot of church work. She was helping kids in the community, and that was her ministry. And when she'd get in history class to the Roman Empire, and the name Jesus of Nazareth was in that textbook, she'd take a little chance to tell a little bit about Jesus of Nazareth, you know? She'd add a little bit to what was in the textbook, let's just say. Well, but I'll tell you what she did all those years. She stayed up till 1 or 2 in the morning writing cards to people. I moved back to Moundsville after about 30 years being away, and everywhere I go to check on people that are getting older in the church, check on people that are getting ill, I really appreciate the cards your sister sends. I get at least 2 a week from her. Everywhere I go, they're saying, "Are you Christy's brother? I appreciate the cards that she sent." Now, she's retired from school teaching. She's working as the church secretary on a part-time basis. She's teaching our English grammar class at the school. It's not a Bible class, so, you know, there's no problem with that. But then, you know what she's doing? Something she never had time to do before. She's going and visiting the hospitals and going and visiting people in their homes. Never had a time to do that before. Now she does. She's evaluated herself. As she goes through life, I can see it. She's a servant at heart. She's evaluated herself. What can I do now to help people? That's one example. Mom. I watched Mom go through a lot of phases in life from the time that I was young. You know, as you might imagine, I was with her a lot. Kids are generally with their moms more than their dads, as in our culture. I remember Mom would teach school all day and then come home and say things like, "I put up with this at school all day. I'm not putting up with it at home." I never knew what she meant by that. And then on Saturdays, You go to one set of grandparents' house, my grandmother and grandfather on her side, and she'd do grandma's hair and help them with their medicine and help them take things. And then we go to my dad's mom's house and help her with her hair and help the medicine take things. And then she'd come home and help us get our Bible lessons, because back in that day, you did a Bible lesson before you went to church Sunday morning. You had it done. You remember that? And he helped us get our Bible lessons. And then on Sunday, she cooked dinner, because there were no restaurants in Moundsville. You didn't go anywhere in Moundsville. You were in restaurants, you cooked, and she cooked heart healthy for Dad because he already had heart problems. And then she went back to school on Monday, and I thought, at one point it dawned on me, she never does anything for herself. What's she doing for herself? She didn't have time to do anything for herself. Well, then time went on, and Dad passed away, and she had a little more time for herself. And my mother, who hated country music, was so desperate to find another man that she went to Dollywood with a guy. She didn't end up marrying him, and it was fine. I'm joking a lot with her, and I joked to her face about it while she was living, so it's fine. Don't think I'm a horrible person, please. But she had a little time, and she went and did some things. And then when she finally retired from school teaching, she became the librarian at the West Virginia School of Preaching, cataloged all that library 17 years. Then she started gradually to become more homebound, and she sent more cards. And she'd saved, her and Dad had saved, penny-pinching savers through the years, and so she spent a lot of her latter years writing out donations to the church, Apologetics Press, National Right to Life, any good cause that would come. She couldn't write those donations when she was 25, but she could when she was 75, because then she had the money. She couldn't go do everybody's hair and teach school and help the kids and do the Bible lessons and get dinner ready on Sunday when she's 75, but she could when she was 35. Evaluate yourself and see where you are at your stage in life and what you might be able to do. I have some suggestions now along a practical line. You might go from actual activity to instructing about the activity. Have you ever heard the saying, I might offend Kathy here, have you ever heard the saying, those who can, do, and those who can't, teach? That is, if you can do it well, you do it, and if you can't do it well, you teach it. It's a sarcastic, I don't like the saying, I'm just saying, asking if you heard it. Well, it goes a step further. It goes like this. Those who can, do, and those who can't, teach, and those who can't teach, administrate. Well, I'm an administrator now, so I kind of use that self-deprecatingly, and I said that to my secretary one day, and she said, trouble is, you do all three, and you don't do any of them well. Thank you very much. Well, I don't believe that. I believe there's a special, special talent in teaching, and it's more important than actually doing something. But you got to do something to be able to teach it to start with. There might be some things in the church that you've been doing all these years and you're too tired to do them anymore. Can you teach somebody about doing them? Remember what the biblical principle is in Titus chapter 2, verses 4 and 5? Paul said that the older women should teach the younger women to love their husbands. Did you know love for husband can be taught? Well, you fall in love, don't you? No, not this kind of love. It's taught. How to love your husband, how to love your children. I'm afraid we got a couple generations of wives that don't know how to love their husbands and love their children. It's taught. Older women teach the younger women. There's a principle there that I'm afraid we're missing sometimes. My wife likes speaking at Ladies' Inspiration Days, and she goes when she's asked. She doesn't seek it out, but she goes when she's asked. She's nervous about it, nervous as anything about it, and she's not that old yet. She's younger than I am, and I won't tell you her age because then I'll be in trouble. But she comments to me once in a while, shouldn't it be the older ladies speaking at the inspiration days to the younger ladies? And most of the time it's the young preacher's wives speaking to the old ladies. Shouldn't it just be the opposite? You have things to say. I don't feel like saying it. You won't need to work anything up. You got enough wisdom in you to stand there for an hour and tell these women how to get along with their husbands and wives. You got it in you. I'm not saying you have to do Ladies' Inspiration Days, but is there a way that you can teach? Is there a way that you can mentor? Now, that sounds like a scary word to some of us, but it simply means that you find a young person, you take him under your wing in the purest possible fashion with all the parents knowing everything that's going on, and you help that person. The Lads to Leaders program is a great program in that regard, and you don't need the program to do it, but one of the things that I learned from that program was this. I forget the exact numbers, but they had the numbers for students who go off away from the church and into drugs and things like that, and students who don't. And the main difference is if they have an adult mentor who is not their parents. In addition to good parents, if they have an adult mentor who is not their parents, their chances of staying drug-free, good citizens, even Christians, increase exponentially. And I've seen congregations do this where there's just a little bit of organization to it, and somebody says, okay, this young person says, okay, I'm going to work on this project for this year, and this older person says, I'm going to help you. And they call them every week, and they get together and do all with the parents' knowledge. Everything's above board. Make sure it's always above board. Take necessary precautions. Make sure you have parents' permission before you try. But what about mentoring a young person like that? You can give advice. You can tell how to do things. And that's the next point, is simply advice. If you can get anybody to listen to you. Sometimes the young people won't want to listen, but they ought to. You should rise up before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man, Leviticus 19, verse 32. The silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness, Proverbs 16, verse 31. If you can get anybody to listen to you and come to you for some advice, you might not be doing things actively like you used to. You might not be running races. You might not be fixing all the food you used to and going all the places that you did. But you are a storehouse of wisdom. I get so sad. Well, that almost sounded like just a truism. Deaths make me so sad on many different levels. For example, I think of this. When someone passes away, a whole library dies. A whole wealth of information inside that gray matter goes away. And where did it go? They spent 80 years. You know, I think of Gene West, our former preacher at Hillview. He's 80 years old now. He's failing in his health. His mind's still good. But when he passes, nobody can go to him anymore. Nobody can go see him anymore. Nobody can listen to him anymore. Try to get those kids to go and visit some older folks now. Maybe you could facilitate that for some of them and just listen to their stories. They'll fascinate the kids if you can just get them over that hurdle of starting. Get some advice. Get some wisdom. And then if people won't listen to you, maybe you consider writing it down. Look at 2 Peter chapter 1, starting at verse 12, if you would. 2 Peter chapter 1, starting at verse 12. We realize this is a little different situation in that Peter was an apostle. He was inspired. But watch what he says. For this reason, I will not be negligent to remind you always of these things, though you know and are established in the present truth. You know this already. I'm going to keep reminding you. You know this. I'm going to keep telling you. Is that an insult? Shouldn't be, because we're forgetters, aren't we? That's why we do the Lord's Supper every week. That's one reason we always say, because we have such short memories, we want to be reminded. The obvious reason is we're commanded to. But then one reason we think we're commanded to is because we have such short memories, we need to be reminded of things. I like the line in the song that says, I love to tell the story, for those who know it best seem hungering and thirsting to hear it like the rest. I know it already, but I want to hear it again. Well, Peter says, I will not be negligent to remind you always of these things, though you know and are established in the present truth. Yes, I think it is right, as long as I am in this tent, this tabernacle, this body, to stir you up by reminding you, knowing, he was toward the end of his life, knowing that I shortly must put off my tent, just as our Lord Jesus Christ showed me. Moreover, I will be careful to ensure that you always have a reminder of these things after my decease. We just read one of his reminders that he wrote that we can read after his decease. What would be wrong with writing them down? When your kids start going through your house, they're going to take time and read it. They're going to take time and read it. So when we get to that particular place in life that we think we might be nearing the end, one of the best things that we can do to serve is endure it with patience and godliness. Jesus was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. I think that means a couple of things. One thing, yes, he was tempted with the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of the life like we are, and he endured it. But I think in the context of Hebrews, it's talking about suffering. And Jesus suffered at every point, all the way to the point of death. So that he can identify with everybody who's suffering at any point in life. If he'd have stopped short of death and ascended back to heaven, he wouldn't be able to identify with the people and intercede for the people who go on to death, would he? He went all the way to the point of death. And I can't tell you how many people I've seen smile in the face of death and not be discouraged because they knew they were Christians. They were lying in their beds and they couldn't do anything. but they kept their positive attitude for their family. On the other hand, I've known of one fellow who spent 60 years in the church and at the age of 85 left the church for some reason and then died. That's not very serving. I look at my life and I think, well, my situation has changed drastically, and it's amazing how fast it changed. About 6 years ago, I was still being called for youth rallies. Now I'm being called for Senior Saints Days. I don't understand. I don't understand. About 6 years ago, I was playing football with the guys out in the yard, and now I'm not doing that. I came to the school of preaching, and I watched as real quickly I stopped being able to have a good rapport with young people and started having more of a rapport with older people. And I missed that rapport with young people, but now you know I'm the scary old man. but you just think, what can I do at this stage of life? And I watched Dad, who was a Christian, became a camp teacher, a Bible class teacher, an elder, then retired from being an elder, became an encourager of preachers. I can't tell you the number of preachers we had in our home. And then he passed away with all faith. You remember that Paul said, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. There's nothing wrong with wanting to go home. Now the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. So it's still an enemy. There's nothing wrong with wanting to go home. But you know how Paul concluded that passage in Philippians 1? I know that it is more needful to stay and help you right now. If God's not taking us home, maybe that's because we're more needed somewhere else right now. I know of a lady. Her name was Bertha Sellers. Dear, dear lady. She was way up in her 80s, getting very sick. Every once in a while had her mind. At one of those times that she had her mind, she said to her granddaughter, Kathy, are you praying for me to get well? Well, yes, I am, Grandma. Well, stop it. I want to go home. Well, we might feel that way, and we have that great blessing as Christians. But while we're here, we don't get to choose that moment. We've got to leave God in charge of that. And while we're here, we've got to have Paul's attitude. I'll do whatever I can while I'm here where I am. These are words that are challenging for me. They might be challenging for you, but I suppose that's what the Scripture does to us, isn't it? It's living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword and pierces to the division of soul and spirit and the joints and the marrow and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Any comments, questions, or rude remarks, except Mark? All right. Let's have a word of prayer while we close, please. Father in heaven, we thank you for the challenges you give us. Help us to live up to them the best that we can, knowing that you are merciful, and you are kind, and you are helpful. Thank you for your Son, Jesus, and his intercession for us. We pray that we might be strong through whatever may come and be with you in eternity. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. Thank you all for your attention today.